ప్రేమస్వరూపులారా.
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
శాంతి నీ లోపల ఉన్నది కానీ బయట లేదు.
పీస్ ఇస్ విత్ ఇన్, నాట్ అవుట్ సైడ్.
అవుట్ సైడ్ నో పీస్, ఓన్లీ పీసెస్.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, and welcome once again to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Today is August 15th, Independence Day, the true independence is when I feel our soul becomes completely independent, and our soul becomes completely independent when our soul lives in dependence of God, isn't it? The true independence is to live completely in dependence of God, because what is it that we can really achieve with our little brains and little energies, the very breath, the words? Everything that we are able to do is only because there is a power. More and more we realize this, and the more and more we feel this, more and more we are covered with this power, the greater, the happier and more successful we become, be it things of this world or the other world. I think that is what is liberation too. That is what is moksha, where you learn to not be dependent on anything else except the source of everything else. If you see the life of any devotee, if you see the life of any spiritual pilgrim, it goes through this process where you learn to slowly give your dependence to God. It starts 10%, 20%, 30%. And as and when this process happens, yes, there are refinement that happens, there is so much of pain also one goes through as you learn this, because there is no learning that happens without some bit of a challenge, some amount of effort, some pruning and some chiseling, just like anything that we want to achieve in this world. So as we march on this journey and slowly learn to give our dependence to God, little by little, little by little, 30%, 40%, 50%, once it happens, then you learn, then you hold on to Lord one hand, and one hand is in the world, and we say, Lord, I have surrendered to you, but actually one hand is still in the world. But the Lord is very kind. He, as Swami says, you take one step towards me, I will take 100 steps, and He does that only because He is able to support us, only because He's encouraging us, and only because He's there with us that we are able to make all those strides from 20% to 30% to 40% to 50%. And that is how the journey goes. And if you look at the lives of any saint, you look at the life of Surdas, Meera, Tyagaraja, they reached a stage where they were 99% dependent on Him. That's what Meera became finally. She just left everything, and when she left everything, she became one with Krishna. It was the same. You look at the life of Suradas, you look at the life of Tulasidas, you look at the life of Ramdas. That is the life of every soul that shone with brilliance, with effulgence, with radiance of the cosmic consciousness. And that is the journey we are all in. We have to slowly learn how to become more and more in bliss, enjoying this independence life, the life that lives completely dependent on His love, His grace, His mercy. Many times we think we can achieve. That is what we start off as a child. But as we grow in the spiritual path, unless we come to this realization that everything is happening because someone else is on the driving seat, we are just like a little child sitting on the bike with our hands on the gear, on the handle, but there's someone else sitting behind us who's actually doing the driving, and we think we are driving. And that is what you will find reflected in beautiful poems of Rabindranath Tagore in Gitanjali. That is what you will find if you read the poems of Khalil Gibran. That is what you will find resonate in the verses of all the Sufi masters. So let's move on to this beautiful journey of living in dependence of the divine. And then we can really be in bliss, really be in this joy of being one with Him, and then His joy becomes our joy. And that is what is liberation. That is what is moksha. That is what is true independence, where you have lost everything and become one with the universal self. The previous episodes of this program, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, I've been sharing with you the journeys of some devotees who came to Bhagwan in the 40s. In fact, it all started off with listening to the conversation with Auntie Mani Bhasham, Samantak Mani Bhasham Auntie, who shared how it was to come to Bhagwan in the 40s, and then how Swami blessed her with the opportunity to compose the Vibhuti Mantra, and Bhagwan then went on to take complete charge of her life, how at every point of her life Swami was there, and how Swami used her as an instrument for Nadopasana, reaching Him through music. Bhagwan's mission started through the beautiful bhajan Manasa Bhajare. Bhagwan chose to start the annunciation of His mission through a bhajan. That is how powerful devotional music can be. And I think in this day and age, that this is the most beautiful, the most enjoyable, and the quickest way to reach the divine. And this is what Bhagwan put the devotees of earlier years into. At that point in time, there were no bhajans. They used to only sing kritis. In the 40s, they used to sing all these devotional songs, largely Karnatak music. The songs composed by Tyagaraja, Muthuswami Dikshitar, Syama Shastri, the trinity of Karnatak classical music. And all their music was so full of deep lyrics, lilting tunes, and the melodies were so rhythmic. This is how Bhagwan had the devotional sessions in those days. These were songs that were so suffused with love for the Lord. These were songs that communicated every relationship with the Lord. In fact, when these devotees reached Prashanthi Nilayam in the fag end of 1943, I am sharing this with you from the beautiful book Sri Sathya Sai Madhura Smriti, written by Mrs. C. Sucharita, who belongs to the group of families from Bangalore who were privileged to come to Puttaparthi way back in the 40s. In those days, there was Nadopasana. The bhajan in those days used to be held in a small house quite close to Karnam Subbamma's house, and Swami himself would sing all these songs in Telugu. Swami's own sister Venkamma Garu had a lovely voice. Kistappa, one of Swami's relatives, he was playing tabla. There was another elderly gentleman who used to play an instrument which is similar to harmonium. And the bhajan sessions in those days were so musical. It was all very musically oriented. And all these people who came to Bhagwan in those days, these six seven families from Bangalore, they were into music. They had learnt so many songs, and so this whole musical ambience in Prashanta Nilayam enchanted them. The elders of that group, they grabbed the chance, they learned the songs that were sung, and they enjoyed singing in Swami's presence those old and golden melodies. For this group, it was like fish taking to water. They became thirsty for new songs, and they made it a point to offer the songs. They knew, they learned new songs every time they came. And it was always these musical memories that brought them to Prashanta Nilayam, apart from the delight of being with such a mysterious person as Bhagwan. When the old mandir was built, the Pata Mandiram as it is called now, 1945, the bhajan hall became a heaven for the singers. Swami would sit on a rectangular granite slab fixed to the floor. On the center of this granite slab was written Om, and it was called Omkaram seat, and Bhagwan used to sit there. So Swami used to sit along with the devotees. He was never on the dais. He used to sit on the stone on which was written Om. So the ladies sat to his left and the gents sat to his right, and there were bhajans both in the morning and evening, and this became a sought after session for everyone. Listening to these beautiful compositions and Swami himself leading the congregation on so many occasions. The singers who sang these songs, they were so tuned to the feeling of those songs. They themselves imagined to be the composer, and that is how they rendered. They thought of Bhagwan as the deity that the composer was referring to. If the song was on Rama, they thought of Bhagwan as Rama. If the song was on Devi, they thought of Bhagwan as Sai Mata. This is how they were singing in those days. So, language did not matter. Style of singing did not matter. Whether you're singing solo or in group did not matter. All were drowned in this bhava of these songs. And what an opportunity it was to have Swami sitting next to you, singing along with you, inspiring you to sing, and he himself hearing the songs and singing along. That is how captivating the sessions in the 1940s were. Slowly these songs, the singers, they knew what are the songs that Bhagwan loved the most. And they started also offering their prayers through the songs. Whatever they wanted to convey to Bhagwan, they knew how to convey it through their melodies. There were singers like B.V. Ramanan, B.V. Lakshmanan, the twin brothers from Chennai. Tyagaraja Kritis used to be sung by Bhagwan along with these brothers. They composed many songs in Tamil and Telugu. And they used to compose these songs to suit the different occasions in Puttaparthi. There was Sri Chidambara Iyer, another great singer. He was a violinist. Puttaparthi Baba Bhakti Chitta Shuddhi Jeevan Mukti. This was one of the Namavalis that this singer used to sing. It was a short Namavali, but the message that is conveyed was so subtle and so profound. Puttaparthi Baba Bhakti Chitta Shuddhi Jeevan Mukti. There was one Amba from Kuppam. who came along with his sisters, and they used to sing very simple songs in Telugu, full of devotion and full of beautiful messages. For Bhagwan, the message always was important. And whenever they came, they used to document the leelas of Bhagwan through their songs. As I mentioned in earlier episodes, there were these two sisters, the daughters of Seshagiri Rao, the first priest of Prashantanilayam, Sundaramma and Sharadamma. Some used to call them Patalammailu, the singing sisters. They could sing in Telugu and in Kannada. And Sundaramma, not only was a good singer, she also played harmonium very beautifully. Swami used to be so happy with her voice and her playing. And they composed many songs in Telugu. In fact, there is an incident that happened during the early 60s. Sundaramma had composed 93 songs and she had written them all in a book. One day, Swami took her book and Swami browsed through those songs. He read every song one after another. And when he came to the song number 93, Swami said, "Oh, I will write the rest 7. I will make it 100, Swami said. And he took a pen and he started writing the lyrics of the next 7 songs and he made it 100. That is how sweet the relationship was between the singers and the devotees and Bhagwan at that point in time. There were sisters Chandrika and Ambika from Tamil Nadu, again great singers. Swami would listen to them with rapt attention. In fact, it would remind people of how when Surdas sang, even though he was blind, Krishna used to be lost in his melodies. We have seen those pictures. But for these devotees, it was a recreation, reenactment of those days, of those moments that we have only read in the Puranas and scriptures. There were many such singers who touched Bhagwan's heart with their soulful renderings. Jankamma, Jalakshmi Gopinath, who later became the warden of the Anandpur campus, Srimati Poona Leela, Srimati Rukmini Rajgopal, Srimati Jankamma used to present a Kannada poem, Ganga Vatarana, and Swami used to love it. And after a while came the second generation singers, Sunanda and Nalini, Sundaramma's daughters, and Jankamma's daughter, Mani Bhashyam, about whom I mentioned. All of them were from Bangalore and they were so lucky. Swami used to ask them to sing a few songs again and again. Swami used to love their rendering. And between those singers, there was a lot of change and variety. All of them brought a beautiful style of presentation. And that is the reason why bhajan sessions in Parthi in those days was heaven for the devotees who came. Anybody you talk to from those times, they fondly recall the bhajan sessions, even though there were no mics in those days. There was Sri Rama Sharma of Venkatagiri, who came with his simple but beautiful compositions. Of course, one of the most unforgettable bhajan singers of those times was Sri Raja Reddy. On Radio Sai, we have had series of videos uploaded on our YouTube channel. We had the opportunity to talk to Mrs. Raja Reddy, Mrs. Josna Reddy, and she shared such beautiful memories of coming to Swami and how so many songs got composed. So Mr. Raja Reddy, with his rich voice, brought a new fervor to bhajans, especially when it came to singing the Namavalis. People felt that he was tying Bhagwan up with his bhajans. That is how mesmerizing, divinely scintillating his songs were. And he was punctual and his presence itself was so overpowering. And later on, when Joshna Reddy also started singing, that was the dawn of a new era of bhajan singing in Prashantanilayam.
मन मंदिर में दीप जलावो मन मंदिर में दीप जलावो जीवन ने लगावो जीवन ने पार लगावो सदा निरंतर हरि गुण गावो सदा निरंतर हरि गुण गावो से भजन सुनावो प्रेम भक्ति से भजन सुनावो सदा निरंतर हरि गुण गावो गुणगावो।
So there was a glimpse of the flavor of how it was in those days. If only we had more recordings. This was a recording that was done many years later, but at least it gives us a taste of how it was in the 60s. In fact, if you go back to the 40s, long before the Suprabhatam was composed, the devotees in Prashantalam used to do this very sweet thing. The women folk would piece together different songs they had learned or heard about waking up God. They would even compose the songs which are meant to wake up the Lord. And so every morning they would have an early bath in the river Chitravati, walk up to Mandir at dawn. And as they came to Mandir, they would be chanting shlokas. And then once they reached the Mandir, they would stand right in front of Bhagwan's room and they would sing these songs to wake up the Lord. And Swami used to love listening to these songs. Very few devotees, great access and great devotion, great way of making use of every opportunity that came your way. In fact, Prashanti in those days, people say, was like Gokulam of Vrindavan. Because Puttaparthi also was filled with milk and yogurt. The village woman would bring in earthen containers. And it was of very good quality. In fact, people used to just eat rice and yogurt. That is how they used to survive in Puttaparthi in those days. There were not many vegetables, not many fruits. Another feature of Puttaparthi in those days was the availability of jasmine flowers. And they were available in plenty. So in the afternoons, women folk would buy the jasmine buds and sit in groups and start making garlands. And Swami would come and join them in this whole process of making garlands. And of course, he would make the best garland. There was also the Tulasi Totta, a garden where there were only Tulasi plants. And some of the ladies would go and pick Tulasi leaves. And they would make garlands of Tulasi. All the women would spend their afternoons making garland. And Swami would come and be with them, play with them, make garlands with them, sing along as they made the garlands. If this was not Vrindavan, recreated, what else can it be? And the woman folk in the end would have the chance to garland Swami and touch his feet. In fact, when Bhagwan was staying in the Mandir, there were devotees who used to stay in Karnam Subhama's house in Puttaparthi because not much accommodation. So morning to evening, they would spend time in Mandir with Bhagwan, but in the night go back to Subhama's house to rest. And when it was time for them to go back to their cities, to Bangalore or Chennai, they would feel the pang of separation so much. The last few days of their stay in Prashanti would become really very painful. In fact, on one occasion, Sundarama, in her dream one night, the day before she was scheduled to return, she composed a song which later on became the Selavu Pata, the farewell song. In her dream, she composed a song pouring out her agony of leaving Prashantinilam. And when she woke up, she could remember the tune, she could remember the words very well. That had just happened in the dream. So she ran to her mother-in-law, Savitrama, and she sang the tune. And both of them now started singing and crying. That is how intense that feeling was. The intense emotion that that song evoked, which came out of the intense separation from Bhagwan, the thought of separation from Bhagwan. So this group, they were supposed to leave Prashantinilam, they packed and everything. the previous evening they had already taken leave of Bhagwan, got his blessings. And so Bhagwan was in Mandir, they were all in Subhama's house in the village. And now that they had got Swami's permission, they had to just leave. They were very pained. They were all in agony. Interestingly, just when they were about to leave, they saw that Swami was coming towards them from the Mandir. He was running and coming towards them, and everyone was so thrilled. They surrounded Swami and got one more Padnamaskaram. And taking this opportunity, Savitrama told Swami, "Swami, there is a very beautiful song that Sundaramma has composed." Swami said, "Oh, is it? Come on, sing that. And she said, "Sundara, why don't you sing that song that you composed last night for Swami?" And so Sundaramma started singing that song. It's so much joy that she was offering it to Swami. That song was a tale of their agony of leaving Swami. But she poured out her feelings. And as she sang, actually she started crying. And everyone around there was now in tears. Swami stood and listened to the entire song. And once the song was over, Swami himself started singing the song. It was a Telugu song. It was like the advice of a mother gives to the daughter who is supposed to leave for her parents-in-law's house. The farewell song that Sundaramma had composed in her dream in Telugu meant, how can we leave this Swami? This Swami who is so full of miracles, this God of ours in Kali Yuga. We are so pained, O Saisha, though we are aware that we have to leave and go. But what do we do? Why can't we stay here for a longer time? You are pushing us into this transient family responsibilities. You have told us what is mukti. You have told us what is shanti. Oh Partisha, why are you asking us to go back? Why is it that we have to go back? We will go, Baba, but we will come back soon. Please bless us. The onus is on you, Swami. You have to call us back early so that we can leave all the mundane world and come back and enjoy this bliss of being with you. So this is how the singers were pining to be with Swami in those days. This is how they did their Nadopasana, their worship of Bhagwan through music. In fact, this joy of Nadopasana had such a tremendous impact on all these devotees. This became their sadhana. This became their satchinta. This became their divine path. Around 1955 or later, when more devotees started coming and Prashanti Hall was full, many people used to sit on the veranda. And that is when Bhagwan slowly started changing the way bhajans used to be sung. As I mentioned before, it was largely songs, but now slowly Swami started introducing Namavali. Swami encouraged them to compose only Namavali so that more people can participate. So that every person who came to Prashanti Nilayam could connect with what was being sung. Because bhajans or Namavalis were short, they were simple, they were more rhythmic. Secondly, they covered all the divine forms. And they covered devotees of different types and groups. And because Namavalis could be followed, now bhajan became a group activity. And now everyone could join. It was not just one person singing. Everyone, young, old, men, women, children, all could join. And that is how slowly the transformation happened in the bhajan singing in Prashanti Nilayam. And devotees were now enthused to compose simple Namavalis. And Swami loved these Namavalis and encourage them to compose more and more. And that is where you heard how Samantakamani Bhashyamanti composed the Vibhuti Mantra, which actually came as a song. It was a bhajan glorifying the Vibhuti that Swami gives to all the devotees. And Mani Bhashyamanti composed many new bhajans. In fact, for every Akhand bhajan, she should compose many new tunes and beautiful lyrics, simple lyrics. And that is how slowly the birth of Sai bhajans happened. As these devotees started coming to Puttaparthi regularly, right from the year 1944, they were all the time waiting for occasions to go to Puttaparthi. And they wanted Bhagwan all the time. They wanted his assurance. They wanted him to solve their problems. And once the problems are solved, they would go back again to offer gratitude. That is how they had tried to be as much as possible in Prashantalayam. From December 1945, when the Pathamandiram came into being, regular festivals started being celebrated. Dasara, Deepavali, Shivratri, Ramanavami, Krishna Janmashtami, and of course Bhagavan's birthday. And these festivals drew large number of devotees from far, near, and all these devotees from Bengaluru would always be there for all these festivals. Proximity to Swami was in abundance. The daily bhajan sessions was another attraction, because morning and evening there used to be bhajans. And as I mentioned, bhajans in those days meant only songs, songs of every type, every language. And all these songs, which were compositions of Tyagaraja, Annamacharya, Ramadasa, Purandaradasa, Kanakadasa, Basaveshwara, Surdas, Meera, these were the songs that were being sung. And all these devotees who used to come from Bangalore, because they were musically oriented, they loved, and once they went back, they all the time tried to enrich their repertoire of these songs. In 1945, one of the aunts of Sucharita, Auntie Srimati Jayadevi A. Sagar, she came up with a very beautiful suggestion. She said, why not have bhajan sessions at least once a week by turns in our houses in Bangalore itself? So all these aunties, there were six of them from Bengaluru. They were married with their children. They were living in different parts of Bengaluru. They all liked this idea. Yes, why not do bhajans once a week? So they decided on Thursday, when they would all gather in one house. And so Sundaramma, Jayadevamma, Subhadramma, Lalitamma, Sushilamma, Jankamma, all these devotees came together and the bhajan started off in all earnestness. They formed their own rules. The bhajans had to start by 6 p.m. and the ladies would go away to this specific house where bhajan is to be held much before, to make all the arrangements. The children and their husbands would join them later. Everyone would definitely be there. Attendance was very important because it was just the 6-7 families. And the bhajans would go on till 8 p.m., 2 hours. And before dispersing, they would announce the next bhajan venue, in which house it is to be held, the next session. And that is how every Thursday became a festival for these devotees. Apart from the decoration, the prasadam, the whole process of doing this bhajan was such a reinvigorating activity for all of them. They were mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually very charged to do this. They would prepare the list of songs much in advance, and they would practice and sing in groups, so eager to learn new songs for every Thursday, help each other to learn these beautiful melodies. And that is how every Thursday they were deriving their cup of bliss. In fact, some of these bhajan sessions were not at all time oriented. They kept singing till they thought that, you know, they had sung enough to please Swami with their offering. And Swami also used to respond in his own inimitable manner every session. Sometimes prasadam, on the prasadam flower would fall from the photographs. Sometimes the garlands would tear up and dangle. And sometimes they would fall at a distance as though someone is throwing the garland. So every time Swami did something mystical. Sometimes a single flower will fall. Sometimes a petal will fall. Every time Swami was letting them know that, yes, He is there, He is there. He is receiving these beautiful offerings, soulful offerings of beautiful compositions. In fact, this whole process of doing bhajans became like a vratam. It became a vow for this group. And they used to sing, starting with Ganesha bhajan, and then they would sing a song to welcome Swami, inviting Swami for the bhajan. And then they would sing songs on all deities and songs that describes the leelas of the divine. And there were songs which described all emotions, songs which also question the Lord, songs where you complain to the Lord, songs where you thank the Lord. Every emotion that people, devotees experience, they related to Bhagavan and expressed this through these beautiful melodies. And all the members, the husbands, wife, children, all would join and sing. In fact, the last 20 to 30 minutes of the bhajan session would be reserved only for children, because they wanted to groom these young boys and girls into this lovely tradition. When 1945 arrived, that was a memorable year, because firstly, they started this regular weekly bhajans in Bangalore. And secondly, that year, they had a lot of hurdles, because that was the fag end of the Second World War. The British was controlling a lot of areas in Bangalore. Transportation in Bangalore was very difficult. There was no proper communication, no way to really commute or communicate properly. There was rationing of food, restricted supply of power. There were economical limitations. I'm talking about 1945. India had not even attained independence. It happened 2 years later, and today is Independence Day. August 15, 2019. I'm talking about what happened in 1945. And even though there were so many limitations, they all didn't have enough resources also. They all had very little earnings. But somehow they wanted this weekly bhajan sessions to go on, and they were so joyful doing this. And they even knew that Swami was with them. Swami was listening to them. In fact, after a few months of these bhajan sessions going on uninterrupted, it so happened that Swami was in Bangalore for a few days. And as usual, Sundarama went to have Bhagavan's darshan. Swami was staying in the residence of Srimati Sakamma of Coorg. And when Sundarama went there for Bhagavan's darshan, Swami suddenly came to her and said, "Where had you all gone on Thursday evening?" And Sundarama said, "Swami, we were all there in the Thursday bhajan session as usual." Swami said, No. I came to your house and I saw there was a huge lock dangling on your door. Then I went to Janakamma's house. There also she was not there. I went to Subhadramma's house. There also none of you were there. I went to Jayadevamma's house, Lalitamma's house. Here also none of you were there. I went to Sushilamma's house. There also no one. All the houses were locked. Where had all of you gone? I could not find you all, so I came back. Actually, what had happened was, that particular Thursday, this group of six families, they had gone to another devotee's house, a new devotee's house, to conduct bhajans, because she requested. They wanted to oblige her, and they did the bhajan there. And now Swami was so sweetly letting them know that, "Hey, I was looking for you guys. Where were you? I went to all these six houses. I could not find all of you." Of course, all these devotees got the clue that it's better they stick to these families for now. And also it was Bhagavan's way of letting them know that I am there. I am waiting every Thursday to listen to your songs. So weeks passed. It became months, and the bhajan, weekly bhajan sessions continued. they had done one whole year of such beautiful sessions of devotional songs, weekly sessions, and they were very, very happy. They were so elated. They wanted to celebrate this achievement in some unique way, because 1 year they have done continuously weekly Thursday bhajans. And they thought, let us do something special. So they sat together to chalk out a program. Somehow we should celebrate the first anniversary of this weekly bhajan session. And they thought, why not have an akhanda bhajan? A non-stop bhajan session for 24 hours. They thought, wow, it's a great idea. And so all of them contributed a small amount, as much as they could afford. They felt that, you know, they should somehow make it a nice celebration. They came up with a program. They decided where they would all assemble by Wednesday afternoon in one of the houses, which was a little more spacious. And they get everything ready in every possible detail. And then on Thursday morning, they thought they will do a brief puja. And then they would start the bhajan, which would go on for 24 hours till Friday morning without a moment's break. This is the first time they were doing this akhanda bhajan. And they thought they will just have only fruits and avoid eating anything solid during the 24 hours. Just be lost in singing. And after Mangala Aarti happens on Friday morning, they said they would serve everyone prasadam, some sweet pongal. And that is how they would end this akhanda bhajan, the first celebration of 52 weeks of non-stop bhajan with a continuous 24-hour ceaseless singing. So they were all so excited about this, so they decided that we should inform Swami physically about it. So Seshagiri Rao, the first priest, as I said, who was the father of Sundaramma, so Seshagiri Rao and Sundaramma came to Puttaparthi on these devotees' behalf to seek Swami's blessings for this program. They thought that let us take Swami's prasadam before we start this lovely endeavor. So they were all very happy to get Swami's blessings for this program. So Seshagiri Rao and Sundaramma came to Prashantinilayam. And one very important item that was needed for the akhanda bhajan was a wick to light the lamp. And they felt that we will make the wick with 365 strands to represent 365 days of the year. Because after 1 year of weekly bhajan, they were doing the akhanda bhajan. So they planned to place the wick in a flat earthen bowl and use ghee instead of oil to lamp burn the lamp. So they were making all these arrangements in Bangalore to celebrate. And the father and the daughter, Seshagiri Rao and Sundaramma, came to Prashantinilayam to meet Swami. And so they offered Swami their idea, their program. Swami was very pleased. Swami felt very happy for the program. And Swami heard them eagerly about all the details of the program. And some people thought that these people have come from Bangalore to take Swami to Bangalore. But that was not so. These people had come only to take Swami's blessings for this program. So the father and duo, they humbly requested Swami to be with them in this program. Just like he's been with them all these 52 weeks, sending them some sign or the other. He told Swami, please bless us and give us prasadam so that we will go back and do this akhanda bhajan. And Swami heard the request, and Swami acted as though he could not believe that these two people were only asking for his blessings and prasadam, and they were not asking him. They're not asking for him to be present for the program. These two people did not come with their intention to invite Swami. They had come only to seek his blessings. But Swami acted as though, how is it that you people are asking for blessing, but you're not asking for me? And Swami said, I have come for bhakti. I have come for devotion and bhajan. And Swami told all these people, see, these people, they want only my blessings and prasadam, but they don't want me. How peculiar is their request? How strange. Nanne vaddu. In Telugu, Swami say, nanne vaddu. Na ashirvadam prasadam chalu antare. Emiti ee vichitram. What is the surprising thing? These people say they don't want me, they want only my prasadam and blessings. And immediately Sundaramma, she fell at Swami's feet and very humbly she said, Swami, we are very poor people, Swami. We will not be able to manage if you come, Swami. There will be a lot of crowd. We cannot manage. We don't have that many resources. So if you just give your blessings, it is enough, Swami. Please don't come, Swami. She almost told, don't come. Because we cannot make all those arrangements that are to be done if you physically come. And seeing this strange conversation, where the Lord is telling, I will come, and devotee is saying, don't come. There were some people around Bhagavan who were listening to this, and suddenly one devotee, Ankamma, who was there, an elderly lady from Bangalore who was there, she said, no, I will give my chowl tree. She had a big hall on Magadi Road I have, so you can do the function there. That location also is very good location. What is the problem? But the problem was that location was very far and none of these people had any vehicle. We are talking about 1945. But then another devotee came and said, no, I will help. I will give you a jeep for transportation. He was the Inspector General of Police, Mysore State, Ranajot Singh. He said, doesn't matter, I will give the jeep. You have it in the chowl tree that Ankamma is giving. Then another devotee, Nagamani Amma, she said, I will send a big photograph of Swami, a flower merchant from Bangalore, Venkatappa. He said, I will do all the flower decoration for this Akhanda Bhajan. So, just in front of Bhagavan's eyes and in front of Seshkira Sundarama, all this is happening. Four people instantly come forward and say that we will do everything. Why are you worried? And now Swami smiled and looked at Seshkira Sundarama and said, so what is the problem? We will celebrate the function on a grand scale. Swami said, I am very happy. I will come on Wednesday itself, Swami said. So, that is how Swami wanted to physically be there for the first Akhanda Bhajan in Bengaluru. Sundarama, speechless, fell at Bhagavan's feet and said, Swami, only you can save our honor, Swami. You have to make this happen. And Swami very assuringly said, don't worry, everything will be fine. And so the father and daughter returned to Bangalore very happy. And they were also a bit worried because they didn't know how to go about making arrangements for Bhagwan's visit. So the D-Day arrived. It was one Thursday, Friday in the July, August of 1946. There was anxiety, lot of enthusiasm as well as lot of concern because you're going to have Swami physically for the function. And so these six families who were all close relatives, they went to this hall to organize everything by noon on that Wednesday. And by late afternoon Wednesday, Swami himself came and Swami himself started doing all the arrangements. And he was very happy. Swami was very pleased. And it was then that Sundarama went to Swami and he asked for permission to go to the city and make some more purchases. She said, Swami, so many things are still left to be done. If you permit me, I will go and do all these things. And Swami said, Sundarama, why do you have to go in search of anything? I am there. I am the wish-fulfilling tree. Go, get empty bags and come. I will fill up these empty bags. You don't worry about anything. Have no fear. You go and attend the bhajan. You go enjoy singing in the bhajan. When I am there, why fear when I am here? Swami said, you bring the empty bags, whatever you want, I will fill it. That is how Sundarama and the rest of the group prepared for the Akhand Bhajan and to test their faith, as though towards evening many unknown people came and people started coming straight from the bus stand, from the railway station. And when you asked, how did you all come? They said, oh, Swami came in our dream last night and said that there is Akhand Bhajan going on. Please join. So Swami was getting his people. And all these people are getting tensed because they had not had enough resources for all these newcomers who started coming. So on the Thursday morning, 8 a.m., there was a short formal puja and then the Akhanda Bhajan started. 24 hours, Swami himself lit the Akhanda Jyoti and the bhajan started. And bhajans those days, as I mentioned to you, was only songs. So singers from different groups started singing. And there were no hard and fast rules for the song. Songs were in different languages, on different deities. Some were solo, some were in groups. And as the news spread, the Akhanda Bhajan is going on and Swami has come. So many devotees started pouring in. And Swami stayed throughout the Akhanda Bhajan. It was a celestial atmosphere for one and all. Throughout the night, men, women, children sat. It was like an experience they never before gone through. And all these people who came, they were offered little food and coffee. When Friday morning dawned, Bhajan picked up momentum, and around 7 a.m., Savitrama, the eldest and the senior most of the group, she went to Swami and she said, Swami, can you see how many people have come, Swami? After Arati, we have to feed all these people. We have to give them prasadam. Swami, you have to come to the kitchen and do something, Swami. We have some food, but with whatever we have, I don't think we can serve all these people. Swami, our honor all lie in your hands, Swami. You have to come and save us. And Swami was so touched by her devotion. Swami went to the kitchen and Swami looked at the preparations. Swami raised his hand saying, Abhayam, Akshayam, Akshayam, Akshayam. Swami said, Akshayam means that which is unending. Swami said, Akshayam, Akshayam, Akshayam. Swami just uttered three words and went back to the dais. The bhajans concluded at 8 a.m. sharp. Everyone was in ecstasy. And Seshagiri Rao offered Pada Puja to Swami on behalf of all the devotees. Mangal Arati was offered. Swami was so touched by the program that he materialized a Shirdi Baba photo on that occasion. After that, the Narayan Seva began. The food was abundant. Every devotee who came was served. There was so much joy in the air and the unbelievable thing happened. No one went hungry. And the first Akhanda Bhajan became an incident that was etched in gold in the hearts of all these devotees. This group of six families increased to 8 with Dr. Padmanabhan and his elder brother Srinivas Raval joining the group. And after that, Bhagwan was there for every Akhanda Bhajan. In fact, on the third Akhanda Bhajan, 1948, the venue was Vasavi Dharmashala in Basavangudi, close to the Lal Bagh Gardens in Bengaluru. And Swami asked the elders to sing Sai Hare Baba Hare. In fact, if you have heard the interview with Samantha Kamani Bhasham Aunty, she has sung various tunes of Sai Hare Baba Hare. For 24 hours, they sang only Sai Hare Baba Hare. And it was an experience where Swami was slowly moving the devotees from songs to simple bhajans. And from the fourth year onwards, bhajans, both regular at Prashanti and during Akhanda Bhajans, used to be a combination of songs as well as Namavali. So there was this phase where you had songs and Namavalis. And after that, Swami slowly started suggesting that we should have more and more Namavalis. And that is how later on, Samantha Kamani Bhasham Aunty, a musician whose interview I have played before, she started composing so many beautiful songs and little bhajans, little Namavalis, and that is how the Vibhuti Mantra came, and that is how so many beautiful songs also came into being. And Akhanda Bhajan sessions went on annually for 25 long years. Swami graced the occasion on all the years except for two occasions. On the 25th Akhanda Bhajan celebration, which was held in the Golden Jubilee Hall in Lal Bagh Gardens, Swami, while addressing the devotees on the Friday evening, Swami made a startling announcement, much to the surprise of all. During the later half of his discourse, Swami said, for 25 long years, a group of 6-8 families of Bangalore have been conducting this Akhanda Bhajan. They have been doing it for the welfare of the world. I am happy with this group's offering. I bless them. And then Swami lit the lamp locally and Swami said that now the Akhanda Bhajan will go global and it will be celebrated in all the Sai centers the world over. all these group of devotees, they didn't know whether to be happy or sad. They were so happy that some idea that they had started now is becoming global. At the same time, they were losing the exclusive opportunity. But Swami was so happy with them that they had started and maintained this sadhana for 25 years. And that is how Akhanda Bhajan became a tradition in the Sai centers, in Prashanthi Nilayam, in everywhere. And every Akhanda Bhajan, Swami used to create very beautiful, amazing things. Shirdi Baba photograph, silver idol of Shirdi Sai, a spatika lingam, a golden chain to thread the lingam. On one occasion, Swami created 108 golden bilwa leaves. So that is how he made every bhajan session special and ensured that every devotee was onto this path of Nadopasana, of reaching the Lord through the powerful medium of soulful singing. This is the way Bhagwan has guided and put so many devotees onto this path of becoming one with Him, and becoming one with Him through music, I think, is the most blissful way, the most enchanting way, and the most quickest way. And really grateful to Swami that we have people of those times who have recorded some of these things. I'm sharing this from the book Sri Sathya Sai Madhura Smriti, and there are many more beautiful things which I will continue to share in the coming episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. If you have any queries, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We look forward to your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Once again, 9393-258-258. Thank you so much for being with us through this lovely session. I leave you with a beautiful bhajan which is to be sung in the yesteryears in Prashanthi Nilayam.